Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vakulskas, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
My guest is T.C. Boyle, who's out with his latest novel, Outside Looking In. He's a juggernaut in the literary world, this being his 17th novel and 28th book. This one takes us into the world of Timothy Leary, back when he was a professor at Harvard in the early 60s and surrounded himself with an array of graduate students to experiment with LSD. T.C., you've written about charismatic historical figures before, Alfred Kinsey, Frank Lloyd Wright, John Harvey Kellogg. When you use one of them as the starting point for a novel, where does your research into their lives end to allow your creative process to take over?
Well, thanks so much, Brian. I seem to be fascinated by these charismatic guru figures of the past who altered our society in essential ways that, let's say, perhaps the generals and politicians have not done. I mean, why do we eat cornflakes every morning? Because of Dr. Kellogg. Why did LSD become widely used outside of the laboratory? Well, in part because of Leary. Why do we have sex? Well, of course, entirely because of Dr. Kinsey. So I love the history behind these figures. I read and absorb everything I can about them and go to the places where they perform their duties. And then let the fiction take over. I never have one of these figures as the central character, but sort of the guiding character that that acts upon all the others.
Well, this book has three main settings. There's Leary's house in Harvard, a hotel in Zihuatanejo, Mexico, and then this mansion in Millbrook, so in the Hudson Valley in New York. Did you go to all three of those settings to try to get a sense of what it was like?
I didn't go to Zihuatanejo for this book, but I have been there in the past. But I certainly went to Millbrook and to Cambridge. I need sometimes to see things like that. I'm not coming from a journalistic background. I am a novelist. The joy for me is to invent things. But as I said a moment ago, I love the history itself. And the history of all of these figures I've written about is true, as outrageous as it may seem, particularly with Frank Lloyd Wright and with Kellogg. Leary's story is very well known. That has been documented in thousands of pages of biographies and books about the 60s and so on. I wasn't so much interested in him per se, but more in how this drug LSD affects us, how it got loose, and what it had to do with producing the 60s. You may remember that I wrote Drop City, published in 2003, about the late 60s and the hippie movement. I wondered how we got there exactly. So this book is strictly set in 62 through 64. Again, Leary's life is so fascinating. You know, you could write a 1,000-page novel about him and his life, but that wasn't my interest. My interest was more in what is this chemical? How does it affect us? And how did it get loose into society when, in fact, it was intended only for psychiatric use?
Well, it's funny you mentioned the Drop City being about the late 60s. I'm in my mid-40s, so when I think about the 60s, I think about Flower Children and that culture. We don't really think about the early 60s other than maybe JFK and the Beatles, and that's about it. So when we look at Timothy Leary, who people my age kind of remember him as this crackpot is in his older years, what was he like back in the early 60s when LSD was legal?
Of course, I was the hippie's hippie, and all truth resided in me, and he was a preposterous old man ranting on TV. We had contempt for him. He was ludicrous to us. In going back, though, to look at where he was coming from when the book opens in 62, he was 41, a very handsome, dynamic, charismatic guy who maybe went off the deep end with these drugs. So I had a kind of reappraisal of him and could picture him as I think he was then, that is, sort of the leader of a cult. He began as a very well-known young psychologist, and he discovered this new tool called LSD that would open up the minds of patients, psychiatric patients. But he began to experiment to the degree at which the experimentation went from science to simply having a party and having an experience.
When you have a lot of other characters in the book, Fitz and his wife Joni. Fitz is one of Leary's grad students, and their son Corey. How did the involvement with LSD affect their lives and as it transitioned throughout the book?
So we have this small family. Fitz Hugh Loney is something like me in that he comes from a long line of undistinguished Irish drunks, and he made his way into college. He had an interruption in his life because Joni got pregnant when they were undergrads, and now he is going back to school, and he's putting behind him the tendency towards alcoholism in his family and in himself, and he is working hard to become a professor of psychology, and he falls under the spell of a very dynamic professor. And, you know, I also compare it to my own experience. My own experience was I did all of that until I was about 25, every drug imaginable. I didn't know any better. I finally grew up and decided what I wanted to do, and that brought me to the IR Writers Workshop, where I immediately started, as well as the MFA, on my PhD. And I had a mentor there, Frederick P.W. McDowell, and he didn't want me to do anything except love literature and study. But Leary's, as mentor to people like my fictional character, Fitz Hugh Loney, he put a lot of pressure on them to use this drug because he believed in it. He believed that it really would expand your mind, and that it was a blessing, a sacrament, as it was called. I wondered how I would have done if my mentors had wanted me to do drugs instead of research. So I kind of imagined how that scenario might have turned out. You know, there's a further thing, too, that interests me here. If you'll notice, the first and last lines of the book, apart from the preface, both reference God. These drugs, the psychedelics, are known as entheogens. That is, they allow you to experience or to see God. Well, I wonder, is that true? It certainly wasn't true of my own experience, but I wonder, for others, is it true? And if so, what does that say about God and our notions of God as codified, let's say, in the Bible and in the Quran and in the Judeo-Christian tradition? Is God as simple as a chemical change in the brain? And if so, what does that mean for us? We are, of course, animals, that we deny it. And we have created our gods in order to explain the inexplicable. Could it possibly be as simple as just this, a miswiring of the brain or creation of new neural pathways through using a drug which, you know, LSD, the 25, was synthesized from ergot, which was a fungus that infected a grain in particular. So what does this mean for us in terms of our existence on this planet and the mystery of it?
I'm chatting with T.C. Boyle about his brand new book, Outside Looking In. It's a new novel. You know, you talked about your time at the Writer's Workshop and transitioned from using drugs into basically an addiction to writing. And you've talked publicly that this was a real demarcation point in your life. When did you realize that demarcation had happened? Was it immediate?
Well, you know, the people I was hanging around with in New York at the time, people of my own age, of the hippie movement, listening to music, being obsessed with rock and roll, and, of course, the entire drug culture. I loved them. It was great. But, you know, after the 9,000th night sitting in a bar stoned, I began to think maybe there's something more. And at the same time, I was growing up, and I developed this interest in literature and in writing, the artistic part of me. And I began to write stories. Fortunately, one was accepted by the North American Review, and that gave me the courage and confidence to apply to Iowa. And again, fortunately, Iowa accepted me. And like my character, Fitz Hugh Loney, I went straight for it. He unfortunately got distracted by his mentor. My mentors there, which included, by the way, Vance Bourgeli, John Cheever, John Irving, and others, just gave me encouragement to continue doing what I was doing.
When you got to Iowa City in, I think, 72, how much of a culture shock was it for you coming from Westchester County, New York, Peekskill?
Not all that much, because it was sort of still the late hippie era in Iowa City. And the town, to this day, remains incredibly cool, and I love it there. In fact, I was just back to do a reading in December. And yes, the city has grown up and it's booming, but the downtown core remains pretty much the same, and I do love it.
You write a lot of short stories, and I've read a couple of them over the last few months, both in The New Yorker and in Esquire. When you're writing your novel, do you devote your entire time to that, or will you break away and write a short story here and there? How does your writing process work?
I only work on one thing at a time. And so the stories are written in discrete periods before and after a novel. All my books of stories are operating in that way. So the new stories you've read in Esquire, What's Love Got to Do With It? And, you know, I Walk Between the Raindrops in The New Yorker and Asleep at the Wheel and those stories. They will comprise half of the next collection. I've just begun the next novel now. When that's done, then I will turn my hand to stories again. A story period might last 6 or 8 or 9 months, but then you begin to burn out on ideas, if you're me, that is, I do, and then I turn to a longer work that can absorb me for a year or more, and that's the place I'm in right now. Except, of course, I've just finished a tour for Outside Looking In, and I am right now in New York visiting and having fun. But also the excuse to come was I had to do a benefit for one of the local libraries that I love dearly.
Well, you've spent a lot of time over the last 40-plus years teaching creative writing at USC. What differences would a student of yours see if they were transported back to a class at the workshop in the early 70s?
Vastly different. When we were students and the professors then, really we didn't have a vocabulary or a method for teaching. It didn't really work so very well. But again, I've been explaining this to the Europeans all my life. It's an art form, what we're doing. And just as the university has always had a music department and a graphic arts department, now, beginning with Iowa's example, many universities also have a literary arts department. But you can't teach anyone in any way to do anything in the arts. Either you have a great gift or you don't. However, what a conservatory program like Iowa and others can do is to give you the confidence and the space and the time and the encouragement to go in your own direction. And your mentors can turn you on to various pieces of literature you might not be aware of. So can your fellow students and contemporaries. And it can give you a base from which to grow as an artist.
As you finished up this book with Outside Looking In about Timothy Leary, did you have a sense that if you had lived in that time and place, you would have been a Leary acolyte?
Wow. Yeah, I'm afraid so. I revered my professors. And my many of my teachers in high school and in undergraduate school, too. Their influence is enormous. Nonetheless, one of the reasons I've written about such characters as the ones you mentioned in the beginning here is that when I grew up in my era here in New York, we were very much taught to be independent thinkers and not to blindly trust what anyone would tell you. And I remain that sort of person, of course. And so I write about characters who are swayed by gurus as a kind of cautionary tale for myself, to remind myself, no matter how good the regime sounds, you cannot be a blind follower. You must think for yourself.
All right. The book is Outside Looking In. It's the latest novel from T.C. Boyle. It's his 17th. It's his 28th book, and he's got short stories all over the internet websites from different publications, New Yorker and Esquire and such. T.C., just a fantastic offering here. I always look forward to when these come out and get a chance to talk to you, and so thanks for joining us today.
My great pleasure, Brian. Thank you.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vakalskis. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com. Also, be sure to like Having Read That on Facebook and subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Thanks to segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time.